Welcome back to another episode of 10,000 Adventures. I am your host, Matthew Holthouse, here as always joining me, my co-host, Maxwell Cowger. We are cooking up a hot episode for you with some hot takes. Later today, we will be joined by our friends Trace and Tyler to get us ready for the upcoming NFL draft and what the Vikings should or should not do. Before we get there, let's check in. Max, how are your eyes feeling? Hopefully you didn't stare directly at the sun for the solar eclipse. Were you able to see it at all?
My eyes are strained more from my computer screen than looking at that eclipse there. I didn't even see much of anything. I peeked out the window at the office and had about 10 seconds of looking around to see if I could see anything, and that was about it. That was my experience. So anticlimactic, to say the least.
Dude, we've been getting hosed with weather for the last two eclipses. I think we had one last year as well, and it was the same exact thing, super cloudy. Couldn't even tell that it was any darker in the sky. We weren't on the path of totality, as they call it, this year, but we should have been able to see about a 75% eclipse of the moon covering the sun. And I looked outside when it was supposed to be at the peak time, didn't have my solar eclipse sunglasses on, but it was so cloudy I didn't even notice if it had gotten darker or lighter. I'm right there with you, but people go wild over this stuff, man. Talking to a guy last week who was driving his entire family to Ohio to get into the path of totality to see the eclipse. Pretty cool.
I'm all for people getting excited for stuff, but I do not understand that one. Like, I don't know. Maybe they had a good little window of time off and it just made sense. Their busy schedule, like, let's go do it. But it seems like such a small little event to make a road trip out of. But maybe they had family in the area or they just wanted to go see a certain area. What was like the totality area? Wasn't it like Missouri?
Well, it traveled through the whole U.S. That's why this
I know that. But like, where was the best location to view it?
Well, the path of totality went all the way through because it goes like in an angle, right? It goes on a line. So it went from Texas all the way up to the Upper East Coast was the path that it went on. So, yeah, I don't know if Missouri was in there. Ohio was in there, the Upper East Coast. Texas had a big portion of it. Austin, I think, was an area that it had really, really, really good viewing. So that's what made this one more unique, is that the path of totality went through a big portion of the United States. We missed it. I looked it up. In the year 2090, it will go through, the path of totality will go through the state of Minnesota. So you and I can be in our old folks' home together, or I'll come next to your grave and watch it with you.
Yeah, I can't wait for that day. It's going to be awesome. But no, that was like one of the more cloudier days we've had in some time, unfortunately. And it was a work day, so I feel like a lot of people didn't, most of the state for that matter, didn't really bat an eye and just kept plugging along like normal.
And you don't really care about science, so you don't see the big deal in it anyways. I get it.
Some stuff, but whenever we get into that talk, which we have a few times now about I don't know, astrology's come up on this podcast once or twice, and maybe you can fit the eclipse stuff into that, but it's not attention grabbing for me in particular.
Fair enough. Well, another story hopefully is a little more attention grabbing, because I know you work in Minneapolis and you love your happy hours and your Uber's home. Uber and rideshare, Uber and Lyft, the rideshare is leaving the state since we've met last. Not really any updates to give anyone. I know on Monday, April 8th, Mayor Fry had a press conference basically pleading for the city council to reconsider. We'll see what happens. The city council's next meeting is on April 11th. It's on their agenda to discuss. I don't know if that means they're going to make changes, if they're going to revoke it, if they're going to move forward. We'll keep tracking the story. It's a more to come type situation. I know they have this data now that has come out that says how much these drivers need to make their minimum wage in the city. It's a lot less than what they've proposed that they're moving forward with. So hopefully we'll see some negotiations and they'll land somewhere that's doable for all parties involved, but we shall see. It would be pretty crazy if those ride shares left the state and or the metro and then Minneapolis for Lyft. So we'll keep watching that story as it develops over the coming weeks. So what do you think about that one?
it's something's got to give, I think. I mean, there's Minneapolis wants to be a city that brings in tourism or hosts big events. Like, we've made that pretty well known here. I feel like, you know, bringing in Big Ten tournaments and bringing in big name artists for concerts and building these stadiums, like, they need transportation in all formats. And without those two big players in your ride share category, like, what's going to happen during before and after Vikings games and before and after Twins games? We're starting to see that here early this season. Well, I guess we haven't seen it yet because this isn't in effect yet, but we will see it pretty soon here if nothing gives. And all of the things that they want to host as a city, and will it impact us as consumers of all of these things, attendance wise, or are people just going to pony up and pay it and we're all just stuck with it? You know, I'm curious to see if anything actually real notable changes.
We'll see, man. I went to the Chris Stapleton concert on Saturday at the Bank. He absolutely rocked it. I know we've had multiple debates on here about the sound quality there. We were on the floor. That's what Stapleton's about, is the sound quality and him being a great musician. It was perfect. I really liked it. I saw some stuff online. I saw the Star Tribune put out that people were complaining about it, as always. I thought he did an amazing job. But we took...
They're complaining about him and his performance or the sound quality?
The sound quality in general. Like, his performance, Chris Stapleton's a guy that doesn't put on this like elaborate show. He just plays his music. And yeah. So he's a guy where the sound quality is very, very important. I know it's important to all artists, but he's a guy in particular, you go to see him because of the sound quality and because of his voice. I thought it was great on the floor. I saw online further up, people are complaining as always at the US.
It's the same thing. Yeah. But
he was great, and he had such a cool set. I couldn't get over how cool his set was. We posted some pictures to our Instagram story that people could see. They didn't do it any justice because we were further back on the floor, but he rocked it. But we took a Uber to and from that concert. And if we didn't have that luxury of knowing we had a sober ride home, I don't think we would have went to the show, or would have dramatically changed our experience that we had there. Not that I'm an alcoholic and not that my girlfriend's an alcoholic, but you know, when you have to worry about how many drinks you're going to have or when you're going to stop drinking, or worry more about how you're going to get home and what you're going to do after the show, those thoughts in the back of your mind can greatly impact the time you're having while it's going on. And so if this actually happens, that's going to change a lot of people's things. Like you said, going to a concert, going to a sporting event down there and having to really worry about their mode of transportation home. And even if some other company does come in to fill the void, how crazy is expensive is it going to be if they have a monopoly on the ride shares in that area? So
no idea.
More to come. We'll track it. And hopefully we have a much better update next week after the city council meets.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's going to be real interesting. See if, I don't know if they have to like re-vote on it or how that's going to go about, but we'll learn more then.
Yeah. Last but not least, I just was going to mention this to you. Target has updated their self-checkouts where you can only use it if you have 10 items or less to go through self-checkout. They are dealing with that much crazy amount of theft that they are limiting how many items you can use in the self-checkout. I was talking to one of the people that work there. They said the long-term goal is to completely remove self-checkout and go to regular manned registers moving forward. Isn't that insane?
You know, I never thought of it like that. Like, the 10 items or less isn't anything new for me. I don't go to Target a lot, but like, I've seen that sign at various stores. I always thought it was like, you can't check out like a full grocery cart full of stuff because you're going to be way too slow working your way through that. And this self-checkout is to give those people with just a handful of items an ability to just kind of fast pass and get out of there. But now that, like, for a while now that that's not necessarily the case and they're adding more of those self-checkouts, I 100% understand that shoplifting and theft is incredibly higher than it used to be, because the opportunity is there, and the people that bait it right into that is probably a ton. So yeah, I mean, it's something that we dealt with for most of our lives. So I don't think it'll be an incredible change if that's how some other department stores go too.
Yeah, I think other retailers are doing it too. It reminds me of this meme that I absolutely love, and it's somebody who's complaining about inflation. So it's a receipt of from the grocery store, and it says something to the effect of, "This is crazy. It was a $200 bill. This same bill used to cost me $150." The top comment is somebody saying, "I'll go through the self checkout with you. We can easily get that down to under $100."
Oh yeah, I'm sure there's people that just get way too carried away with it and think they're, I don't know, just invincible with the self checkouts. So Target's seeing it, other stores are seeing it, and yeah, it's unfortunate because it is nice and convenient, but might be going away.
I get it. You got to do something. Can't have nice things. Can't ever have nice things. All right, well, with that, let's send it over to our interview with our friends Trace and Tyler to get us ready for this upcoming NFL draft taking place on April 25th. We'll see if we got it right with our predictions with what the Vikings are going to do. All right, and then today on the podcast, we are joined by Tyler Fornes. He lives and breathes the purple and gold. He runs the podcast and YouTube channel Vikings First and Skull. He is also a publisher and writer for Sporting News. Also today, we are joined by another special guest, Trace Adams, good friend of the pod, and here to help us with his Vikings skull takes as well. Guys, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for doing this. Tyler, the man of the hour for our episode today, thank you so much for being here, man. Before we get too far into it, give us a little background. How did you get into living and breathing the purple and gold?
That's a really good question. I don't really remember the exact moment or anything, but it was around 94. And as you can see, as you guys can see, and obviously on audio, you can't see this, I've got Warren Moon jerseys framed hanging behind me. He's my favorite football player of all time. And at that point, he was also the quarterback in the Minnesota Vikings. And then 98 happened. I was at an old enough age to really have an impact on me. I turned 9 before that NFC Championship game. And yeah, it just hasn't left, and we're still waiting. We're still hoping that we can get that Super Bowl. But at this point, who the fuck knows, man? Well, hopefully this quarterback can help us get there.
Dude, the freaking team we all love to hate. I remember the 98 heartbreak, watching it with my family, and I just remember the silence from all of my uncles and just the disgust and the walking out of the house. But speaking of quarterbacks, first thing I want to run by you, the Kirk Cousins saga. Mm-hmm. Do you think the team got it right with letting him go for the amount of money that he was going to get or demand?
Yeah, I think it was the right move. They honestly should have done it a couple years sooner. But the main reason why Kirk Cousins was signed in the first place is Rick Spielman couldn't identify a quarterback in the draft. It remains to be seen whether Teddy Bridgewater would have been that guy. We'll never truly know because he almost lost his leg. And that 2016 season looked like it could have been really special. You had the rookie quarterback on the rookie contract salary. You had a defense that was emerging as one of the top units in the league. You had good weapons on the outside. You still had Adrian Peterson. And then once that knee injury happened, everything fell apart. But Spielman could never identify him. So he went and got a mercenary in Kirk Cousins. It didn't work. And it's not to say that Kirk Cousins was bad or he was the greatest thing on earth. It was somewhere in the middle. But he was brought in to be the final piece of a Super Bowl team. And he failed on that mission. And they should have moved on. But Rick was too afraid to really make that move for a quarterback and be aggressive. And I think that's what ultimately led to his downfall. And you hear him talk on his podcast now with the first pick with CBS Sports. He's talking about the Vikings are going to have to overpay. Well, yeah, he's going to think it's an overpay because he is like the least aggressive general manager I've seen in a long time. He just does not want to like put himself in a disadvantageous position. And there's merit to that. But at the same time, you're probably never getting a quarterback. So he extended Cousins, and then the Vikings did what they had to do. They had to appease ownership, and they kept him around, and they gave him that little extension, the 1 year, $35 million, which was objectively fine. And once the bidding got too high and they would lose that flexibility, they said, now we're good. And now they're in position with a really good core structure of the team to add a rookie quarterback. And I think that's exciting.
Yeah, I was on the fence of the move when it happened, because my take is I don't think the Vikings were going to be able to get a quarterback better than Kirk Cousins. And even if we get the draft right, I don't think whoever they draft, even if it's the next Patrick Mahomes, this year would also be better than what we would have gotten out of the position from Kirk Cousins. But I've definitely started to come off that take reading and listening to all of the media talk about him, just not necessarily that Kirk Cousins is a Fugazi, but that he's won one playoff game. He's a 500 quarterback. That's what he is. That's what you should expect from him. If we were going to pay him 500 quarterback money, then great. But for the amount that he got at Atlanta, you're absolutely right. You wouldn't be able to build any sort of team around him. And he's not the caliber of Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady that can win with not as much talent. So totally get that. Max, Trace, boys, what do you guys think?
Like, if that's the take that this current like leadership has, like, what was even the point of making him an offer at all then? You know, because they made him an offer, right? Was it 2 years or something like that? Like, what if their stance is that powerful that they want to go out and get their guy? Then why did he even mess around?
So there is merit to keeping Kirk Cousins. He's obviously a very good quarterback, and one of the really difficult things about the NFL is you never want to take a step back at the most important position. Because if you take a step back at that most important position, it can really kill a head coach. It can kill a general manager. If you get quarterback wrong, you're done. That's pretty much the long and the short of it. Unless you're Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. Because even by screwing up quarterback, they still made a Super Bowl with the last pick in the draft. So if like with Kwesi and Kevin O'Connell being on essentially the last 2 years of their deal, they need to figure out how to get that right. And having the stability of Cousins gives you the opportunity to consistently compete. Now, you're probably never going to be able to reach the mountaintop, but you can at least be in every single game with the exception of like the one clunker. And there's a lot of merit to being in every single game. Just look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. They haven't been under 500 in over 16 years. Mike Tomlin has never had a record under 500. Even the year where they started Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges for most of the year. So, and from a business perspective, and this is the one part that I don't think people give enough credit to. From a business perspective, if you're competitive at the end of the year, you get butts in the seats, which means more parking money, more merch money, more concession sales. All of that matters. And then if you make the playoffs, you get even more money. So even though from a fan perspective, from a long-term team building perspective, making a wild card game doesn't really matter. If you lose, you'll lose. But from a business perspective, it all matters. So there's merit to bringing him back. But if you want to truly grow and truly establish the future, taking the rookie and having Kirk for maybe one more year makes a lot of sense. But he was never going to sign a 1 year deal. And they also, something that most people don't realize, they couldn't offer him more than $40 million a year because of the void years on the contract. Each void year has a base salary. You can't go over that.
I think a lot of it too is stemming back from, okay, Spielman. Yeah. Kirk Cousins was Spielman's quarterback. He brought him in, signed him as a free agent. Kwesi, and then when Kwesi comes in, I mean, yeah, he wants to, you know, put an offer out to Kirk Cousins, 2 years, whatever it was. being kind of a bridge quarterback until he can find and go after a quarterback that is, you know, his own, right? Granted, he's more of a premium bridge quarterback, but especially coming off an Achilles injury where it's not guaranteed, I was just baffled to see Atlanta throw all that money at him without any. I mean, I'm sure they did their medical testing. It's protocol, but I just find it baffling that they're willing to pay that amount of money for that long for a quarterback at the end of his career coming off an Achilles injury. Pretty gruesome injury, right? We'll see how Rodgers does with it. But I know Kirk's not as mobile. He doesn't need to be as mobile, but it'll be interesting to see and see it pan out. See how Atlanta develops as a team, because I think the amount of money that they're paying Kirk, it's going to essentially handcuff Atlanta as a team for years to come, especially when they're big guys, you know, your Bijan Robinson, your Drake Londons, your Kyle Pitts, they're going to need to get paid. And that's not even, you know, touching on the defensive side of the ball, but I think in the long run, I do agree with you, Tyler. It was a good decision to move on from it. And in the Spielman era with Kirk Cousins and, you know, the playoff runs we had, or the lack thereof, on how short they were. We had all the offensive pieces around, but then, you know, we get all the offense clicking and then the defense falls apart. We can never put them all together, right? And I think a lot of it too with Spielman not being able to find his guy, I think Zimmer had a big effect on that. With, you know, Zimmer wanted to take all these defensive guys in the draft, where back then in 2005 to 2017 or 2015 to 17, maybe 18, the league started to shift into more of an offensive league, right? And all these coaches are starting to gear up on offense and then piece together a defense, right? And I think it was kind of a weird time. I don't know.
Yeah. So the one thing I'll say about Atlanta is if you look at where they are now and where the Vikings were at in 2017, yeah, the Falcons didn't make the NFC Championship game, but they also didn't have a Case Keenum on just a heroic speed run of a True. Good football season. And if you had a capable quarterback in Atlanta, that team probably wins 11 games. So their theory is we invest in a quarterback. We have a lot of the pieces already surrounding him. We have a good offensive line. We have great weapons. We have an emerging defense that we're going to continue to build with. Mm-hmm. And now you have Raheem Morris, who has coached on both sides of the ball. He was an offensive coach under Kyle Shanahan for the Falcons. He was a defensive coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before becoming the head coach. Odie, you're fine. And now he was a defensive coordinator for the Rams. So he's got versatility. Like he right. is going to be like a CEO type. He's got brought in some really good coordinators. Jimmy Lake's going to be fascinating to watch running that defense. But with what their personnel was, and if you look at Atlanta's history, it's arguably worse than the Vikings. They've never had back-to-back winning seasons, and they've been around since the 70s. Like, that's shocking. And you take a look at that and you take a look at where they are now. I get it. I wouldn't have made that investment, but Arthur Blank wants to win a Super Bowl and he's in his right. 80s. Like, mm-hmm. like it's kind of morbid to say, but he's not going to be around forever. So right. you got to shoot your shot.
Right. And they'll probably try to, you know, bring back some of the, well, I know it's different coordinators, but similar play style as they had with Matt Ryan. I mean, you're not going to have, your mobile guy, right? I know they've kind of had a couple of mobile guys with Heinicke and Ritter, you know, those guys where can create a little bit, but Kirk's got a little bit of wiggle. We'll see how it works.
Well, I'm surprised. That's shocking to hear that Matt Ryan never had back-to-back winning seasons in Atlanta. I didn't know that statistic. That's really surprising. I mean, they did make a Super Bowl, so they made their mm-hmm. run, and then they blew it in the Super Bowl. But him not a quarterback like Matt Ryan never having back-to-back winning seasons is really shocking to me. One thing I think about Atlanta and the reason they can't afford Kirk Cousins is because they have nailed their last 2 to 3 drafts. So they have a lot of guys contributing on rookie deals that they don't have to bring in high money free agents, where the Vikings haven't necessarily had that luxury. And I think I know they're overpaying for Kirk, but part of the reason they can't afford him is because they have a lot of young talent on their rookie deals. We're trying to do the exact opposite, have a quarterback on a rookie deal and then build pieces around him. But with that being said, Tyler, how would you grade Kwesi's job so far in his first 2 years, both in free agency and in the draft? And then looking at this year's draft, is this really kind of his make or break draft? If he messes this up and doesn't get it right with the quarterback, can he survive another two seasons with us?
So I do need to correct myself. I was wrong. They never had it back-to-back winning seasons until Matt Ryan. So yes, Matt Ryan had a couple of them. It looks like
he had an MVP, right? He had an MVP year. Yeah.
Their Super Bowl year.
Yeah. 2008 through 2012 were winning seasons. And then 2016, 2017, that was the Super Bowl loss. And then they lost in the divisional round the following year. My biggest thing with Kwesi is we just don't know. And he has, I think this is such a pivotal offseason for him because it's really going to be the one where he gets to add pieces. And the last 2 years, it's been about trying to shed bad contracts. It's been about trying to start the building blocks of shaping the roster in his image. And that's what's difficult for general managers. You need time to get rid of players that you don't want that were on with the previous regime. You need time to be able to bring in other guys to replace them. It's not as simple as I go to my pantry and I don't want this tomato sauce. I'm going to take this Alfredo. Like, you don't get to just throw away the tomato sauce. You have salary cap. You have like bylaws that you have to follow. And that makes it really difficult. And especially when you were as financially hamstrung as the Vikings were coming off of what Rick Spielman did with the franchise. And look, Spielman tried. But towards the end, he was just trying to do stopgap fixes because he knew that he needed to save his job and he wasn't planning enough for the future. Well, the 2022 draft, Kwesi hasn't had a good one. There's still time to really be able to salvage it, but it's not looking good after 2 years. That was all with Rick's scouting staff, Rick's front office. Then Kwesi brought in his guys. 2023 looks significantly better. But now you have the 2024 class. You have had these guys in the building for multiple years. They've been scouting this quarterback class for multiple years. And how are you going to evaluate? How are you going to be able to make those decisions? If they nail this, Kwesi could be here for a long time. If they completely botch it, he may be gone after the year. It's a very delicate situation, but I think the path that they're on is good, especially when you talk about the process. The process they're using has been very good. Mm-hmm. But then with process, you have to see some form of results. I'm a firm believer in you utilize good process. Results will come in time. It may not come every time, but it will come. It's like in blackjack that you double down on 11 against the six. You do it every time. Are you going to always get the 10? No. But just because you get a two once and they flip a 10 and a two and you lose, that doesn't mean you did the wrong thing. And it's the same thing with being a general manager. I'm not going to panic, but if we don't see some form of results this year, some form of growth, then we're really going to have to start questioning things.
When you say getting the process right and you like what they're doing, what like specific things are you looking at that they're doing that you're a fan of?
How they're approaching building this team. They believe in investing in their core pieces. They made the big trade for TJ Hockenson and they signed Josh Oliver. And when I looked at that, I'm like, okay, why are they doing that? Because they see an inefficiency in the market. And I think that's a valuable one. Would you rather pay a middling wide receiver would you rather pay DJ Moore $17 million or TJ Hockenson $17 million? To me, it's Hockenson. DJ Moore is a fine wide receiver, but he's maybe top 15, top 20. I'd rather give it to a top five or top three tight end in the NFL to be able to give me mismatches and be able to do a bunch of different things. And Josh Oliver, one of the best blocking tight ends, he's getting on average $7 million a year. That's a pittance. And he's basically a third offensive tackle. So he's approaching things in a very interesting and unique way. I think some of those have really worked. Some of those haven't. And part of the problem with some of the drafting stuff they drafted for Ed Donatell's defense, which is a Vic Fangio scheme. Well, when you draft for the Fangio scheme, you don't worry about tackling, because the idea is once the ball ends up somewhere, it's a gang tackle mentality. So you don't need to have guys who are great tacklers. You want guys who are fast and can get there, because if they miss it, there's going to be somebody else right there to make the tackle. Mm-hmm. In the Brian Flores scheme, no, you better be able to tackle. So guys like Andrew Booth Jr., Lewis Cine, they're already at a little bit of a disadvantage because that's not a strength of theirs. So I'm fascinated to see how Kwesi identifies things and how he continues to grow. I love the idea of bringing in Grenard and Van Ginkel, but there's still work to be done. There's still things that need to happen in the draft, but I like the direction. But at the end of the day, if you want to keep your job, you have to produce some form of results.
Mm-hmm. And to give them a little bit of a break, injuries have played a pretty big part into some of the people he's drafted and brought in. I mean, you look at our big offseason signing last year, Marcus Davenport. The GM can't, it's not his fault if Marcus only plays in, what, 3 games for the year. And then his first big pick, his first round pick, Lewis Cine, breaks his leg in like one of his first games, misses the whole year. So like some of that he gets a little bit of a grace too, for sure. Trace, what were you going to say?
But I'll say this, Marcus Davenport got injured every single year he was with the Saints. So you knew what you were getting into.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if they get injured, like to a point, an owner's going to be like, tough, how'd you fix it? It's not about, hey, I'm going to make an excuse here. It's about, okay, this happened. What was your plan? You had no backup plan? Well, then when you had no backup plan, why didn't you find one? Mm-hmm. And those are the questions he's going to have to answer as a general manager. And like, I think you're right to a point that, hey, you get some grace, but you also don't. It's an interesting dichotomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tough game for sure. I know Max had some numbers that he threw out the other day to me with regards to the number of draft picks that Kwesi, you know, had drafted over. What was it? Last year was his first year, or mm-hmm. 2 years ago. And maybe two out of the 9, 2 out of the 11 guys, you know, are starters, right? I think it is hard to judge Kwesi based off of that. I mean, but like you said, Tyler, I think, yeah, you said it great with how GMs are held to a standard nowadays and how quickly these owners are willing to swap out GMs. I mean, you can kind of look back and, you know, some people are saying, well, Kwesi, maybe you should have, you know, signed Kirk, you know, 2 years ago rather than, you know, offering him a contract, you know, when he was due, right? Is Kwesi on the hot seat? I know Spielman was teetering on the hot seat, and I think he didn't want to make that decision, and he just kept rolling with it, right? But yeah, I think you said it great there, Tyler.
When you looking at this year's draft, as we're recording this, I think we're almost 2 weeks to the day to the draft night. Tyler, I don't know if you're going to the draft party at the bank. Max and I might go. Two things. What do you think they're going to do with the 11th pick? And then what do you want them to do? What do you want to see them do? So what do you think they're actually going to do? And then what would you like to see them do?
I think they're going to strike a trade up for a quarterback. I don't know how far they're going to be able to get up. Probably not 2. Maybe 3. I keep hearing conflicting things coming out of New England. Some are saying that they're more than willing to trade. Some say they are locked in on a quarterback. And that just depends on who you're talking to. If all 4 of us are Patriot sources, you may get 4 different answers depending on who's asking. So I don't know what that looks like. The Cardinals have already said, yeah, we're open for business. And the Chargers are going to be open for business too. But at the end of the day, what quarterbacks do the Vikings like? My belief is they like Drake May a lot. And Drake May is their guy. I don't have anything sourced there. But everything that he brings to the table tells me that he's the guy.
Do you think that's partially because of our signing of Josh McCown?
No.
No? Okay. I didn't think so. I know that's what a lot of people think, but... I wouldn't agree with that.
I think the signing of Josh McCown has everything to do with who Josh McCown is and not because of Drake May. Now, mm-hmm. you do get the added bonus of getting more information on May, which is never a bad idea.
Right.
But I think they're two separate things. They wanted McCown. We got to remember, I think it was 2020 or 2021 when they hired David Culley.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they wanted to just hire McCown from an NFL locker room to be their head coach, and they got bullied into not doing it. So nobody else then wanted the job. They hired David Culley. They fired him after a year, which it sucked for Culley, but now he was on like a 4-year deal. He basically just got gifted $10 million and he can go retire and have fun. but he's considered a hot coaching prospect down the line. And the first year Kevin O'Connell was a position coach in the NFL, it's 2015. Guess who's in that quarterback room? Josh McCown. And O'Connell likes to bring in people that he's worked with prior. So that's why you have some of the Rams assistants and now you have McCown. That's why Brian Flores was ultimately brought in. Like, there are reasons for all of these things. And for me, looking at it, I think they're independent of each other. And I understand by kind of putting two and two together, like, oh, this, that, like, nah, it's just give it time. Like, I really don't see it being a one-on-one scenario. Mm-hmm. But I do believe Drake May is the guy. I do think they like Jaden Daniels. Everything I heard last year was they tried to move up for Anthony Richardson, and there was an offer on the table for the Cardinals to trade up to 3. Cardinals obviously said no. They didn't want to go down that far. That's what I was told. So they've already like been ultra aggressive in trying to get their guy by all accounts. And I think their guy's going to be May because he has the prototypical build. He's tall. He's built relatively thick. He's like 230 pounds. He's got dual threat ability. He can fire it over the middle. He can make Superman type throws. He needs some work mechanically. That there's no doubt about it. But when you look at all factors considered, I just think he's the guy. And I would bet O'Connell is comfortable with probably 3 or 4, maybe even 5. But he probably wants 1 really bad. And my guess would be it's May.
Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
Well, okay, so you think they're going to trade up to make a play for Drake May, hopefully, mm-hmm. in the 3 to 5 range for a pick. Do you think that's going to cost them both their first rounds this year and then also their first round next year to do that? Or how much are they going to have to give up to get there?
Everything's a very fluid situation. It also depends on who else is bidding.
Sure.
Because the more teams that bid, the higher the price goes up. And I did some research on the topic, and I looked at like different like trades over the past, I think it was a 13-year sample size. I went back to 2012 when you had the Commanders paying an ungodly amount to go from 6-2 to get Robert Griffin III. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason why I did there is because that's kind of when the perceived quarterback tax really came into effect. And based on how I utilized the data, I didn't really see a quarterback tax. It was, you're paying a similar amount to the few top 10 trades that people moved up for non-quarterbacks. So they could end up giving that first round pick. It wouldn't shock me. And quite frankly, they could give 4 first round picks. If that quarterback hits, I don't care. I'd rather have the picks, obviously. But it doesn't matter if the quarterback hits. That's the big thing. And it's a much bigger risk if you trade 4. But if you trade 3, you're basically sending a first, your 2 firsts and 2 seconds, because those 2 seconds you use to go get a first. 2 firsts and 2 seconds, that's really not that high of a price if that quarterback hits.
Okay, so you think they've identified a guy they're going to trade up to go get their guy if it's a fluid situation, right? If he's there, depending on the moves the other teams are making on draft night, you think that's what they want to do? I totally agree. I think that's why they went and got that second first round pick, was to mm-hmm. give them more capital to move up and go after the guy that they want. Okay, that's what you think they're going to do, or that's what you think they're going to do, but what do you want them to do? Is that what you want them to do?
Yeah, sell the farm to get Drake May. Do everything you can to get him without giving up Justin Jefferson or Christian Darrisaw. I love Drake May. He is number 2 on my board. He is the top quarterback. The only player higher than him on my board is Marvin Harrison Jr. I think May has all the tools, all the ability to succeed, and you just need to give him a little bit of fundamental coaching. One of the tough parts about it is when you look at the air raid, because he ran a form of the air raid at North Carolina. Air raid footwork is very fluid. It's very loosey-goosey because you have to be able to like modify your base consistently, because the how the air raid works is you'll have one route, but then you have different landmarks. So if a guy is playing a certain leverage, you're going to break it off here, you're going to break it off there, and you have to kind of understand that, and that leverage can change, and you have to be ready to fire from slightly shifting your base. If you're at 10 o'clock, you got to be ready to shift to 11 o'clock to make that throw. Right. So if you get him in these pro style footwork, pro style system, and you drill it and drill it and drill it, which they're going to do all offseason anyways, that's mm-hmm. going to help him get better. And that's going to help him figure out how to utilize his gifts better, because everybody's got talent of some sort. But if you don't have somebody that's able to harness it, that's able to maximize it, then you're really just like wasting your resources. And I think O'Connell's going to be able to do that for him. And I honestly think that Drake May could lead the Vikings to a Super Bowl down the line. He's that good.
What's his accuracy? Like, I think that's O'Connell's like number one quality in a cornerback. And I never hear anybody say anything about like any of these prospects being extremely accurate in their throws. I'm sure they are, but like, is that a concern at all with him? I think he's a little bit more erratic than some of them, isn't he not?
Erratic is a tough term to use for me.
Okay.
He's not perfect, I'll say that. But when you watch the film in North Carolina, some of the things he was able to do were just bonkers. And he really drives the ball down the field. And it's a very vertical passing attack. So you're throwing a lot past the sticks. You're throwing a lot deep. And he wasn't throwing to great receivers. The scheme itself was very poor. There, one of my friends, JP Acosta, he's a writer at SB Nation. He posted a play where like May has finished his drop and there are three guys in like the same area. Like,
right.
That's just poor spacing. You have to be able to space those guys out. But look, the footwork thing is real, and he will skip a ball and he will sail, but you can fix those things. What you can't teach is some of the freaky stuff he can do, where he's rolling out and then he'll drop a dime down the field or go across his body to make just an insane throw. And that kind of stuff is special. So I think the accuracy issues are explainable enough to make it worth it, because hell, Josh Allen, he had what, 41 touchdowns last year? He threw 22 picks. The Bills were okay. And I don't think Drake May's ever going to be a throw 22 pick kind of guy. But I think you deal with 12 picks a year if he's throwing 35, 40 touchdowns and he's leading a juggernaut type offense. Like, that's livable. So, like, considering his volume of throws, he had 24 drops this year, which is top 10 in college football. Like, I'm okay with only a 64 completion percentage because of how much they were driving it down the field, but there's extenuating context and factors that need to be talked about. I get it, but I'm fine with it.
Josh Allen, everybody said, was inaccurate coming out of college. Right. And when you say rolling left or throwing across his body, I close my eyes and I just see Mahomes and Josh Allen and in Bills and Chiefs uniform, so I'm totally okay with that if that's how it shakes out. It's interesting though to hear you say he's the number one on your draft board. So you have Drake May above Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels for mm-hmm. who you like, or you say he's going to be like the best available and that those two are already spoken for, or truly your best, you think he's number one?
I think he's number one, and I try to eliminate all outside noise. You're never going to be able to eliminate it all, especially when you're in the echo chamber like I am. But when I watch the film, I try to let the film speak to me based on what it is. Like, I went in with Caleb Williams having preconceived notions that he played way too much hero ball, and he did. But it was also significantly less than I thought, because, oh boy, that scheme did nothing, absolutely nothing to help him. And you have to kind of keep an open mind that way. But I also think they're in a relatively similar like tier and cluster. Like, May is 0.9 points ahead of Williams on my grading scale, one full point ahead of Jaden Daniels. Like, they're all really good prospects and they all bring something a little bit different to the table. And it's really going to be a pick your poison. I don't think Williams is a special generational guy that we thought he was going to be going into the 23 season. I just don't. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it last offseason when I watched him either. But there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of talent with May, a lot of talent with Daniels. It's who do you like and how are you going to be able to maximize them and get the most out of your football team? Those are the questions you got to answer. And mm-hmm. I really think that with Drake May, you can get a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm shocked to see how terrible of a season USC had, because Lincoln Riley is a great coach and he's a great offensive coach and Caleb Williams is a great prospect. It's so weird to see them not be able to bring it together this last year and how much Caleb Williams has kind of dropped. He's still the consensus number one pick, but how much his stock has fallen from how this season has unfolded. Everything I've seen and read in the media about Caleb Williams, I want to get your perspective on this, Tyler, is that he's kind of a diva. And he's got like this air about him that other former players that are commenting on him don't like. And he's like, doesn't have the right attitude with going to the combine, but not participating in anything and only going there to do media and some of the other things that he's done leading up to the draft. Are you hearing the same thing from your insiders that people aren't in love with Caleb Williams as much as they were prior to the 23 season?
I'll challenge you with this. Whenever you hear people talk about it, how much do they know? Who are they? And some of these guys are just old heads. Like, I'm 34 years old. I don't truly understand Gen Z. But I can tell you this. I'm not going to be scared off because he paints his fingernails because his mom owns a nail salon. Like, it's not my cup of tea. But I also just don't care. It doesn't matter to me. This dude busts his ass on the football field and he gave everything in that Washington game. And he had a phenomenal game. They ended up losing by 10 and he put so much pressure on him. He just kind of broke down to his mom in the stands and the camera caught it. If that's like 20 feet into the locker room, nobody says a damn word about it. It doesn't matter. I'd rather have a guy that cares and is going to put that much effort and passion into the game and might be a tad emotional. Like, who cares? Like, Tom Brady was emotional. He broke tablets on the sidelines. He was getting in people's faces. Emotion is not a negative. It's how you utilize that emotion and harness it. And unless somebody who directly knows Caleb Williams tells me he is a bad human, do not get involved with him. I'm not even going to think about it, because anybody will say anything negative about a prospect to get them to fall, to form their own narrative. Man, most of those people don't know anything. So I don't read into it at all. A lot of players skipped the combine. Jaden Daniels didn't even do the weigh-ins at the combine. Marvin Harrison Jr. didn't even do anything at his pro day. Like, it's a nothing burger to me.
Talk about McCarthy, because it seems like a lot of the mock drafts have, and these are talking heads as well, but they have these mock drafts all over the place, and it seems like a good chunk of them have McCarthy being taken by the Vikes via a trade-up. And I felt like during the season, a lot of these mock drafts had McCarthy going like bottom of the first round. And I'm wondering like what they're seeing, because that offense didn't really have him do much. It's like, what's changed, if anything, that's potentially getting him into a top three pick now? Like, is it just people conjecturing because that's what they're doing every day and they got to talk about something? Or is that actual steam that he might be taken in those first three picks and the Vikes could be that team?
So the reason why he was that low is because it takes time for people to catch up. And one of the things I said earlier was I try to stay out of the echo chamber and I try to make my own opinion based on just watching the film. And I will be the absolute outlier on a player from Penn State, edge rusher Chop Robinson. He's fourth overall on my board. A lot of people don't even have him as edge one. They have him at like edge four. I love the player and I think he's explosive and he's going to translate. But when you have a guy like McCarthy, a lot of the things that you are looking for are hard to see during a live game. You don't get to see a lot of like the flashy plays. You don't get to see him really put in situations that are bad. He didn't play in 7 fourth quarters this year because that team was that good and their schedule was pretty easy. But when he needed to, he did show up and he did thrive and succeed. But it can take a little bit for all the draft analysts and teams to really catch up and get a guy in to where they're supposed to go. And that's when like guys end up rising in the process. It's just because people are catching up to the tape. It's not, oh, this guy just had a phenomenal pro day. I mean, that may bump him up a tiny bit, but the tape is what matters the most. And sometimes people just don't get to the tape until later. Like, I have him as a mid-second round grade. I get taking him in the top five because the ceiling is blatantly there. I just have questions if he's ever going to be able to do it, because there's just things he wasn't not able to answer in college. Because as you said, Max, he wasn't asked to. And that's not his fault. But if you weren't asked to do it in college, I can't expect you to do it in the pros with any form of guarantee, because I haven't seen it. So there's layers to it. But the McCarthy thing is people are just catching up. And that happens every single year. Baker Mayfield wasn't a guaranteed first round pick until people really dug into the film. And then he started to creep up and creep up and creep up. And then all of a sudden he was going first overall. That kind of stuff happens somewhat regularly, just because like a lot of these guys don't have time to grind film during the year. They grind it after the year's done. And once they get their reports from their scouts and then they start really diving in, it takes time.
Mm-hmm. I think JJ McCarthy's got the lowest ceiling of that second tier. I mean, he was, yeah, spot on your points. He wasn't called upon. He threw for over 300 yards one time last year. I think when, you know, push comes to shove, I think, yeah, it's not something that I would be willing to, you know, trade up for. I'd be willing to stay at 11 if we, you know, if the guy we wanted in that, you know, tier one, if it was, you know, Drake May, if it was Jaden Daniels, if they're gone, like, I don't think we should be trading up to take McCarthy, since he does have the lowest ceiling. Like, I mean, he would be a great fit for our offense, you know, the type of, you know, style that O'Connell, the pro style, West Coast style that he wants to run. I think he's a great fit for it. He's got the size, he's got the athleticism, but I think when it comes to throwing the ball, like, I mean, people say like he can throw it on a rope. I mean, yeah, he can, but like consistently, I mean, he did the one couple of games that I saw him. I mean, I know the one against the Gophers, like he threw it on a rope, right? It was, but yeah.
We'll see. One thing I always think about, Tyler, when you're doing some of this research, do you think there's any, you talk about a player's stock rising, like a JJ McCarthy. Do you think there's any smoke screens going on from other teams that don't actually like him, but they're putting that vibe out there that they're really interested in him? So a team like the Vikings might panic and overpay to trade up to get to that spot. Do you think there's any sort of that jockeying going on amongst the teams?
100%. And this is where the old adage comes in. Who's telling you the information and why do they want you to know it? Well, the only person that reported that Michael Penix had good medicals, Tom Pelissero. Well, who did Tom Pelissero get that information from? Wasn't the doctors. That's the violation of HIPAA laws. Came from Michael Penix's camp. And that doesn't necessarily mean that his medicals are good, because it's only coming from Michael Penix's camp, and the team doctors will have that information, and the team doctors will be able to determine if it, like, he is good to go. So you have to have some that media literacy. It's the same thing with politics. Republicans are going to say bad things about Democrats. Democrats are going to say bad things about Republicans. And you have to be able to smell through the bullshit and figure out what the actual truth is. It's the same thing with trying to figure out what's a smokescreen and what's real. And I, you know what? He could go second overall. He could go 11th. He could go later. I really don't know. As much as we know, we also know nothing. Like, Justin Fields wasn't supposed to get out of the top five in 21. He fell to 11. Maybe JJ McCarthy's that same player. There's just so many variables, and like, but we'll find out in time.
Did you see, speaking of Michael Penix Jr., did you see KOC on the Pat McAfee show when Pat kind of pushed him on that piece?
Mm-hmm.
What'd you take of that? Don't look into it. Don't read into it.
Connell didn't want to say anything to share his cards, and McAfee was trying to bait him into it. Mm-hmm. It was a good interview for McAfee. It was a good time to drop that nugget. But yeah, I'm not reading anything into it. These guys are professional speakers. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah is one of the best at speaking incredibly intelligent while saying absolutely nothing of substance half the time. It's a beautiful art. And O'Connell's in the same way. These guys are media trained. They know how to say things without actually giving away any state secrets. So mm-hmm. I read nothing into it.
Okay, good. Let's say the draft doesn't break how they want. They don't trade up. They're sitting there at 11 on the clock. The main quarterbacks are gone. Your tier ones, there's been a run of them, which is most likely going to happen whether mm-hmm. they trade up or not. So we're sitting there at 11. What do you want to see them do?
Without having seen the board, if one of the top three receivers is there, Odunze, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, just go get him. Screw it. Just take the receiver. And receiver contracts are getting so absurd that having a receiver on like an $8 million deal that'll outperform it is going to give you so much surplus value. And those guys are all incredible football players. I would love to have Romo Odunze on this team and to be able to have a traditional X receiver to be able to do some of those things. Oh, buddy, sign me up. But those guys are probably all gone. I would pound the table for Chop Robinson. That's from Penn State, like I mentioned earlier. I love his game. He's got a first step like Von Miller, and he can do a lot of those similar things. He needs to learn how to play with better functional strength and more consistently, but he's a disruptor. The mm-hmm. second he gets off the ball, he attacks. He can break up the running game. He can rush the passer incredibly well. And you wouldn't ask him to be the guy right away. Get him in the weight room, get him working on it, be a third down menace. And that's probably how I would use pick 11, because I don't think Michael Penix Jr. is worth that pick. I hate Bo Nix as a prospect. And Spencer Rattler's a wild card, but I wouldn't take him at 11. I probably wouldn't take him at 23. So I would pound the table for Chop.
Interesting, the Chop for Chop. If they got one of those three receivers sitting there at 11, does that mean JJ's gone?
No. This offense needs three receivers, and you have two of them on rookie contracts. Probably means Addison is gone at the end of his rookie deal, or the rookie receiver you just drafted, they move on from. It does not mean anything about Justin Jefferson. It means, hey, Justin Jefferson, hey, you have more help. Now you can be great and not have to deal with as much bullshit. Like, you need three receivers.
Do you think that they're letting JJ be included in the conversations of what quarterbacks they're looking at, or no?
Oh, yeah. They would be stupid not to. You obviously take his input. Now, you don't have to go his direction, but you keep him informed. You keep him involved. You listen and you communicate. Like, you don't just be like, oh, you hate Michael Penix. Oh, guess what? Here's Michael Penix. You have conversations. Be like, oh, I hate Michael Penix. Listen, we understand you don't like Michael Penix, but we really like him. Here are the reasons why. And if we have the opportunity, we're going to take him. And then you have that communication. And he may be a little annoyed that you're going in a different direction, but it's a positive annoyance because you're mm-hmm. having a positive interaction with him and you're telling him the reasons why and you're laying out the plan. Like, Justin Jefferson should not be allowed to make the pick, but he should absolutely be listened to.
Mm-hmm. Kind of the opposite of our neighboring or border battle state with Aaron Rodgers and, you know, wanting to pick, get a wide receiver, and they turned around mm-hmm. and they picked Jordan Love, his replacement.
It's so tough with the Packers because as much as I despise the organization, they're brilliantly run. They have all these draft rules and thresholds that they follow, and they've been doing it for 30 years, and they've had 30 years of sustained success. And if Jordan Love hits, there's a chance that they have back-to-back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And I know that sounds torturous for us to think about, mm-hmm. but like, their system works, but you have to be careful to not piss him off either. So right.
It works to an extent because, I mean, yes, you're getting the quarterback position right, but like I mentioned earlier, the league's changing, and you saw it last year. They were diminished at the wide receiver position because they haven't been picking wide receivers in these drafts and the past two, three years. So I think, yes, you're right. From the quarterback position, they've been getting it right, but I think other areas they've been on the downfall. But
I'll say this, watch them this year, because everybody in that room last year was either a rookie or a second year guy.
Yeah.
Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks emerged in a big way. And then you also have Christian Watson, who is a great field stretcher when he's healthy, but that's the problem. Mm-hmm. That receiver room is not nearly as bad as we think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like they kind of just burn bridges with their players a lot, and we're more of like, it seems like O'Connell's more of a, everybody come together and communicate and let's have a good locker room environment. And I just hope that's like, I hope that's something that we can use to an advantage to at some point. If everyone's happy and willing to fight for a head coach, I think that can work really well.
And that's a good point, though, too, Max, because I think, and Tyler, I don't know if you have any comments on this, but with the Aaron Jones signing, apparently, I think LaFleur didn't even know that he was gone, and he must have saw it break on Twitter or something. And, a couple hours later, we pick him up. But yeah, I just find it kind of bizarre on that process, on how they do it.
That's just grabbing all these Packers year after year after year. It's, I don't know if it's a coincidence or what.
Yeah.
A lot of Packers like to come here to piss off their former team. I think the Packers played this very poorly with Jones, thinking that he would just take that significant less money, and they misjudged the market. And then they just give Josh Jacobs the exact same contract that Aaron Jones got, only $12 million guaranteed on that $48 million deal. Like, I think they could do better by some of their veteran players, but they also signed some relatively bad contracts. So it's their own fault. Mm-hmm. It's their own fault for the reasons why they're making some of these boneheaded decisions. It's very odd. They're not perfect. I trust them when it comes to the draft more than almost any organization.
They didn't like Aaron Jones. For whatever reason, the coaching staff didn't like Aaron Jones, and they just didn't play him in like key moments in key games. He was hurt a little bit, but he is such a great player. He torched the Vikings many times, and they just, like, it seemed like down the line, don't play him. They don't play him in the clutch. I don't know why they didn't like Aaron Jones. I think he's a great player, and I think it's probably either our best or second best pickup this year.
Yeah, I loved it, the Aaron Jones signing. I thought it was awesome. I also think that when you look at some of the advanced metrics, like, he's still balling out even though he's 29 years old. Dalvin Cook is toast at 29 years old. And
we ran him into the ground.
They did the right thing with Aaron Jones, giving him like a decent amount of money, but then having the void year so they can continue to sign him if he continues to play this well. Because he's really good when healthy, but that's the big question.
Right, right. All right, last question before we let you go, our last topic here. So you think we're sitting at 11, things didn't break our way. You think, or you're okay with them not going with a quarterback in this year's draft and playing out the year with Sam Darnold as a starter?
I don't love it, but I would be okay passing on one at 11 because I don't think any quarterback is worth it. Right. And then you still have 23, so you could take Michael Penix Jr., a Spencer Rattler, or if everybody wants me to absolutely cry at the Score North draft party, then they will take Bo Nix. But you have Darnold. He obviously has talent. He thrived last year with San Francisco in his limited playing time. Look, if you have to roll with him, you have to roll with him. I wouldn't love it, but I would get it. And you don't want to force quarterback. That's how you get Christian Ponder. So
I'm just worried that we talked about it earlier, Kwesi with his job security. I think if he doesn't take a quarterback and the Vikings have a sub 500 season, which they'll probably have either way, if they don't have that the future looking bright from taking a quarterback from this year, I think he's worried about being gone at the end of the 24 campaign. So I think from that perspective, I feel he thinks he's handcuffed and that he has to take a quarterback. Do you feel mm-hmm. that way too or no?
I think they can go to management and be like, hey, we had our guy, we targeted him, we couldn't make it work, here's the reason why. And if it's out of your control, it's a lot easier to sell to management and say, we also didn't believe in X, Y, and Z. And if they don't show anything, then you're in the clear because it shows that you were right in those evaluations. But if you pass on Michael Penix and then all of a sudden he's like contending for rookie of the year and you don't take a quarterback, that is when you're going to be in a position where you're going to lose your job. So it's difficult. You just got whatever you choose, just be right. That's going to be the biggest thing. That's going to determine the future.
You have a good sell to ownership too. Like Christian Ponder, they're still probably fresh on their minds. Like, we don't want another situation like that where we're just settling for mm-hmm. something just because of the fact that we need a quarterback. So I feel like that's probably in his mind as well. But what I heard you talking about this on your, I think it was your podcast, Tyler, like what's different last year versus this year as far as like our assets that we have that we can give up? Obviously we have another first rounder that mm-hmm. maybe like last year we struck out moving up to get Richardson. Like this year is going to be different where we might have a leg up on some of these other guys we've got a bid up on.
Well, they have a second first round pick, and I'll phrase it like this: current assets are worth more than future assets. If you give me $100 now versus $100 bond I can cash in a year, the $100 now is going to be worth your while more because you could be able to utilize it in however you want. And it's a more tangible asset. It's not something that you're just waiting on in the future. So I would definitely do it, prioritize that. If I'm making a trade down, I would much, much prefer to make a move like that where I get 11 and 23. I get two first round picks this year and I can put faces on them. I can take a Chop Robinson, and then I can take a Terry and Arnold. Well, hey, I now add those two pieces to my defense. And like when you're looking at it that way, it's a lot easier to sell because you really don't know for mm-hmm. sure what the next year's class is going to be and where that pick is. So 11 and 23 are sure bets. Nobody else can do that. Nobody else that's going to be trading up for a quarterback can offer you a package like that. The Broncos future. Don't have any ammunition. The Raiders just have their base picks. The Giants traded pick 39 to get Brian Burns. So they only have, I think it's pick 50 in round two. You have a leg up on these guys because of that second first round pick.
Yeah, Denver doesn't have anything. They traded everything to get Russell Wilson, who's playing for Pittsburgh this year. So they're
well, in fairness, all those picks are already taken care of. Like none of the picks that they don't have this year from the Wilson trade.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's that trade is fully complete.
Okay. Well, regardless of what they do in the draft, the Vikings have a success this year if they win how many games?
I'm not putting a number on it. The success is going to be how are they setting themselves up for 2025? And how is that rookie quarterback developing? To me, that's going to measure the success more than, hey, they won 10 games. They won 11 games. Because if that rookie quarterback looks like he's the guy, to me, that's the best form of success you can have outside of winning a Super Bowl.
Okay, that's a perfect answer. I think if they win more than 7 games, regardless of what happens in the draft, if they win more than 7, that would be a really good year for them. Max, well, Trace, then, what do you guys think?
Then I would go bet on it because the over-under, I think right now, is 6.5.
Yeah. And I would take the over, honestly. I mean, just being a Vikings fan optimistically, I'm always going to take the over on them.
Mortgage the house, boys.
Yeah.
I'm not putting a number on it either. I'm already thinking about like this draft class, or maybe it's just more or less the quarterback we take if we take one. Mm-hmm. I think it's all riding on them. And you know, these free agent signings that we have, like how are they performing and things of that nature, and just seeing how we kind of build rather than this year expectation being about wins and losses.
Mm-hmm. And even if we do take a rookie quarterback this year and he sits and Darnold plays, I mean, Darnold was a number two overall a couple of years ago. So I think he hasn't had the weapons around him that, you know, he has at his disposal now. So I think there can be a correlation of a Viking successful year and the amount of wins. I mean, if it's 8, 9, 10, I think it's going to be successful either way. But Tyler, I had one question for you. What are your thoughts on drafting two quarterbacks, one say in the first round and one in a later round? Is that not worth it? Because, you know, metrics say, you know, only 2, 3, 4 quarterbacks are going to make it, you know, in the league and have this, you know, semi-decent career. Mm-hmm. Some may say super successful, but your odds are better if you're drafting two, right? For one to hit.
Theoretically, but I don't think there's going to be anybody worth it where you'd be taking them. I might take a shot on Austin Reed from Western Kentucky, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done there. We talked about the air raid footwork earlier. He's played in the air raid pretty much his entire career. So when I get it, I would say no. You drafted that guy last year in Jaren Hall.
Right.
And you have him on a rookie deal, and he showed some promise before that Packers game. Like that drive against the Falcons was awesome. Mm-hmm. And then against the Packers, it just collapsed. But he was also a rookie. So I'm not going to hold it too much against him. I still think that there's some positive there. I would not draft a quarterback this year outside of whoever you take at the top. But theoretically, I get where you're coming from.
Right. Yeah, I've just seen people throwing it around on talk shows, podcasts. So figured I'd ask you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The Spencer Rattler one you mentioned, I had just seen recently some buzz. I think he was interviewed probably by one of our Vikings fans that obviously he would like to play in the NFL anywhere. So he said he would like to play for the Vikings. But I find the Spencer Rattler one really interesting. Not to get too into the weeds of it, but yeah, if you've seen some of the documentaries when he was playing in high school and going to Oklahoma, and yeah, his career path was interesting. And you mentioned the Bo Nix one. I mean, yeah, he's another interesting one, but yeah.
Rattler fascinates me because he's got Mahomes level arm talent.
Yeah.
If you can figure out the rest of it, you've got a winner.
And the creativity.
Yeah, that's the never-ending question. Can you harness the rest of it? And he's had some unfortunate circumstances, but a lot of guys overcome that. So you have to be able to parse all that out. And I don't know if Rattler would be anything, but if there's a tier two guy I'd be willing to bet on, it's probably Rattler.
Mm-hmm. Dark horse, for sure.
He gives me too much vibes of Kellen Mond, Spencer Rattler does.
Really?
And that's funny that you say the two quarterbacks in a draft, because that's what happened with Kirk Cousins. They took RG3 with their first round pick.
Yeah, that's right.
Took Cousins with their fourth round pick. Obviously, RG3 tore his ACL and he was never the same after. And Kirk Cousins is still playing and got all that money from Atlanta. So I think that's where a lot of that conversation stems from, because that's what happened there and that's how it shook out. But I think you guys are too nice. This is the National Football League. It's about winning. If they're showing progress, that's great. But if the team only wins 3 or 4 games, the head coach and the GM are going to be on the hot seat, because ultimately it is all about winning. And the last thing, I think they're both great. So I would hate to see them to be let go when they did draft well and they're progressing, but the wins aren't there. You still got to win the games at some point.
Like, I'll say this, if they're progressing, there's no way they win 3 or 4 games. It's going to be at least 7.
Right.
But I think at a certain, like, unless it's an absolute train wreck of a year and they win 3 games, that's a different situation. You're not going to be seeing progress from a lot of these guys, or everybody got injured. And sometimes those years just happen. Like, it's the NFL. But to me, I just want to see growth, and we're setting up 25 to be potentially a special year.
Mm-hmm.
They draft a quarterback right away. Should he be the day one starter, or should he sit a little bit until he's ready behind Darnold?
He should earn it. If he earns it, start him. If he's not ready, don't.
All right. I love it. Tyler, this has been great. Real quick before we let you go, how can people get in contact with you or follow you or get more of your content? Where should they go? What should they do?
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter, The Real Forno. I share a lot of my articles there. Otherwise, easiest way to find most of my stuff right now, because a lot of the team sites are still being built, is just search my name in the sporting news and you'll be able to see everything there. You can also find me at home, living next to Max's dad, if you have that information, but that's probably a little bit private. So yeah, just on Twitter, and then obviously my Vikings YouTube channel, Vikings First and Skull, and that's also in podcast. That's all you got to search, Vikings First and Skull, and you'll be able to find all of our stuff there.
All right, brother. Thanks
just
again.
Just take
for
a drive through Delano and look for the best yard you can find. You're probably getting warmer. And then just go one house next door and you'll be looking at Mr. Forno there.
Yeah, that's pretty true. Your dad is has a real nice lawn and mine is, well, it exists.
All right. Thanks, guys. Trace, thanks for coming on. We'll
have you
on.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
Thanks for everybody else for sticking with us and making it all the way to the end. That's all we got for you for today. We hope between now and next time you get a chance to get outside and adventure. Bye, everybody.